Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. This is the official Survivor Series 2020 review and reaction show with the Botch Guy, YouTube's own Botch Guy. So you know what to expect. This is going to be a ton of fun. Let's get everything going right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Well, guys, Survivor Series 2020 has come to a close. And what else has come to a close, apparently, is The Undertaker's career. It seems as if we have officially closed the chapter on the in-ring career of The Undertaker. That doesn't mean he's not going to make a Raw reunion appearance or a Raw All-Stars appearance and give somebody a choke slam and make everyone happy when, of course, we have fans in attendance. But this to me symbolizes and solidifies The Undertaker done in ring, which I am a bit disappointed that The Fiend did not interfere. I've been predicting that for, I think, a year and a half, that The Fiend would interfere at the 30th anniversary and attack Taker, leading to a final match at WrestleMania with Undertaker and calling it a day. And we didn't get that. But I'll save my in-depth review for a little bit later in the show when the Botch Guy joins me as we discuss everything that happened on the show. Of course, not just Undertaker's official retirement and farewell ceremony, but also some of the great wrestling that we saw on the show, including Asuka and Sasha Banks. And the gobbledygooker made an appearance. I mean, that's sure. I guess we'll mention that. Of course, Drew McIntyre, Roman Reigns. As Roman Reigns continues to absolutely light things on fire, and I mean that in a good way, because he just gets it. I mean, he is falling so naturally into this heel role that it's scary. But I think it's something that we all saw and all knew that he was capable of, and we are seeing it before our very eyes, that Roman Reigns is a natural-born heel, period. And it makes you wonder what the hell WWE was doing for the last 6 years of trying to force this corporately created PG version of the babyface Roman Reigns down our throats. And it really just makes you, it makes you wonder, it really does. But Roman Reigns is heel, and he belongs heel, and he's doing an excellent job. It was a really good match, and again, more detail to come with the Botch Guy. But I wanted to also touch on the live show, because the live show was supposed to happen, and it went like down the tubes, so to speak, because I don't know why. I started the show. I thought I was on air. I was talking to myself for about 15 minutes, and then I went to another window that was open, and apparently the show already started, but not in the window I started the show. So it was very weird. I'm very frustrated, and I will be doing a live show later this week to make up for it. So my apologies to anyone that was on the line waiting. I really do apologize. I did see some people on there. I couldn't even answer. It was just, I don't know what was going on, but I will be doing a live show sometime this week. And maybe it's on Wednesday, where my wrestling nostalgia typically is. Maybe we'll do a kind of a wrestling nostalgia, but with a group version of it, meeting the listeners. So stay tuned for that, guys. I do apologize. A live show makeup, make good, will happen this Wednesday. And you can call in and we can talk about anything, right? Like, we can talk about Survivor Series, we can talk about The Undertaker, we can talk about Raw, whatever you would like to. So I wanted to make that point as well. So, guys, again, thank you for joining me here on the official WWE Podcast review and reaction show. Not that we are the official WWE Podcast, but our podcasts official review and reaction show. I want to make that legal distinction. So, all right. Well, again, guys, Wednesday, let's do a live show Wednesday. Save maybe your questions or comments or frustrations for Wednesday. You can call in and we will be able to vent together regarding whatever is on your mind. So that call-in number, by the way, if you're looking for a call-in number for the actual show, not the voicemail number. That voicemail number is going to remain the same. The call-in number is 516-387-1527. 828. So that is the call-in number for Wednesday. I'm thinking of doing it around 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll be putting out a link on my Twitter feed at wrestling_audio and, of course, on my Instagram under WWE_podcast. So if not, just search out WWE Podcast on Blog Talk Radio. You'll see the logo, subscribe there, follow us, and you'll make sure that you get the latest notifications whenever we go live or schedule a show. Okay, well, guys, it's time for the Botch Guy. It's time to discuss Survivor Series 2020. His reaction, my reaction. I hope you enjoy it. I know that many of you did the last couple of times that we got together. I think it's always a great time when he comes on. High energy for sure. And also, if you haven't already, my goodness, go subscribe on YouTube to his channel, The Botch Guy. I don't know what you're doing. Go do it because you'll be glad you did. And you'll be saying to yourself, why have I not seen this sooner? Right? I can guarantee it. So thank you guys. And I'll be talking to you soon. All right, everybody. Welcome to the official WWE Podcast Survivor Series 2020 review and reaction show. And you know what this means, right? It's pay-per-view review, which means we've got the Botch Guy here, YouTube's own Botch Guy. You guys know him from the last couple of pay-per-views that he was on the show for. And he's back, of course, tonight to discuss Survivor Series. So how's everything going, man?
Well, you don't have any other YouTube celebrities to go? You just go back to me every single time there?
Well, no. I mean, I put over everyone on my show. So, no. Are you saying, I mean, I could get more people on my show, but you certainly have the attention of my listeners. They definitely love you. So,
hey, I love your listeners, man. Like, I don't know any of them. I'm sure they're really nice people from everything I heard. But apparently you guys enjoy when I'm on, and I really do appreciate it. Coming over from the YouTube there. If you guys don't know who I am the Botch Guy. That's my channel. I guess you could plug me, but
yeah,
I'm just letting you know.
I do. No, I every single show I mentioned, I was like, hey guys, you got to check it out. And I don't just do it because you're coming on the show. I'm like, I just do it because you're just one of the fastest growing channels. Number one, number two, I always say that you're the most authentic, just easy to watch. You don't have to, you know, dedicate a whole bunch of time. It's just a couple of minutes at the most, and you've got some great content. So, I mean, I say that every single time, and it's really great to have you on here because I think we've gelled pretty well, and I like what we've got going. So, I really want to jump into Survivor Series, though, because here's the thing. We got The Undertaker closing the show in a very long, drawn-out farewell to The Undertaker. I mean, I'm not going to really nitpick at that because it's The Undertaker. I mean, he's deserving of everything that, you know, WWE can throw at him, and he's deserving as much time as WWE will allow him. So it's not necessarily the length of time, but I guess I had been predicting for a year and a half, so kind of I feel like a fool now, that it was going to be at the 30th anniversary of The Undertaker's debut, somebody would interfere, probably The Fiend, to attack The Undertaker, leading to his final, true final match at WrestleMania. That didn't happen. It was just a very kind of somber Undertaker retirement. I mean, this seems to be officially it. I mean, I do not see anything beyond this in terms of in-ring. How did you take this whole, I don't know, it seemed like 15, 20 minutes worth of entrances and tributes and everything else? Did you enjoy it? Did you expect more? Were you disappointed? What were your emotions?
I was pretty emotional, to be completely honest. I'll quickly just say on the entrance, I feel like they used more, you know, of their budget on the Undertaker entrance than maybe the half the roster.
Yeah.
Because I think those flames were going on like literally the entire like 9 to 10 minute walkout that he had. So respect for the WWE on that one for sure. But honestly, I really enjoyed it. I know a lot of people are going to be upset that The Fiend didn't come out there and kind of interfere, or who I really wanted was Sting to show up and have just a stare down with him. I thought would just be so iconic. But, you know, I think they did it really well. It's classic Undertaker, right? It takes like 10 years to get in there, and then like takes 10 seconds and it's over, right? Like, it's just classic Undertaker. I love the Paul Bearer tribute. I love the gongs there as well with it. And I'm not sure if it was a hologram, but what did you think about the pallbearer specific tribute there?
Oh, that's the part that actually drew me in, because I just got finished watching The Mortician, the documentary on Paul Bearer on the WWE Network. So it hit home even more. And Paul Bearer, you don't really realize how big and how important he was to Undertaker's career until you go back and really, you know, watch what he did and watch just how much he added to the Undertaker's character. And that documentary series, number one, is really good. Number two, the tribute itself, yeah, having him there in some kind of holographic way was really moving, and I'm sure it was for a taker, Mark Calloway as well, to see that's what really, I was like, whoa, because I don't think they've ever done a hologram before outside of, I think it was like a John Cena Bray Wyatt cage match a number of years ago. I don't remember a hologram ever being used in WWE. So that was emotional for sure.
Yeah. I do wonder if it was a hologram. Like, I couldn't tell, because they dimmed the lights so much and they kind of changed the camera angle a little bit to the left there. See, this is what I think. I look for a little these things, like, because I do like detective work on my channel. So like, I was thinking, oh, maybe it wasn't a hologram, but whatever it was really well done. It was emotional for me. I almost teared up. I was really close to tearing up. And the fact that nothing else kind of came out of it, it was just a promo and like a big send off, really does make me agree with you that this is the end. This isn't a Conor McGregor situation that he's going to be back again next week, but I truly think this is the end. That's it. The Undertaker's done.
I think it's very symbolic and definitive that this is the end of his in-ring career. That doesn't mean, of course, we're going to see so many more documentaries and interviews. I mean, 30 years of pent-up silence. I mean, he's already just starting to come out with everything. I mean, they've done The Last Ride. They've done Undertaker versus Brothers of Destruction, rather. They're starting to really have Taker open up. So I think beyond the documentary series, which is, there's going to be a ton of great stuff coming out, I'm sure, over the coming years, and beyond any NXT trainee type of coach that he'll be down at the now Capital City Wrestling Center, whatever it's called now, there will be a bigger role for him, and I'm sure in management or whatever he wants to be. But I think this is the end of his in-ring career. It doesn't mean we're not going to see him back on a Raw All-Stars or a Raw reunion to choke slam someone and, you know, call it a day, kind of like Austin does here and there to drop a stunner and drink some beer. Of course, we would want this in front of actual live fans whenever that happens. But yes, this to me was the signal of the end of his in-ring career, but not necessarily the end of his appearance completely in WWE. That's kind of how I read it.
So do you think there's still then a small chance that we will see The Undertaker and Sting in the middle of a ring? Doesn't have to be a match, but that's just them standing in the middle of a WWE ring together.
Yeah, boy, this thing doesn't die, does it? It will never die. I mean, Undertaker, Undertaker could be like, could, and God forbid, pass away tomorrow, and people would say, it's a work. He's not dead. He'll rise, right? Like, there will be nothing that will ever stop this rumor from completely dying. And so, to answer your question, I think there could be a stare down maybe at WrestleMania where they just kind of stare down at one another. I mean, not expecting any kind of match, of course, but it's possible. They have to acknowledge it. They have to acknowledge it in some way.
Stone Cold.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, we could get a stare down. Of course, not a match. I mean, we're 20 years late on that, but it's definitely a stare down, just to at least kind of like wink and nod to the fans of like, yeah, we know we missed that, right?
Yeah. And it's something that I've been wanting for so long, and I thought this might have been the last chance, but didn't happen. But overall, I thought it was just a great, great job, and I would rate it pretty well, like probably in an 8 or 9 range. I thought they did a good job, and I don't think The Fiend is any less of a character because he didn't come out. Yeah, it would be nice if he had a rub, but I don't think of The Fiend any less because he didn't come out and attack The Undertaker. You know what I mean?
No, exactly. I don't either. And I mean, it really is not a negative for anyone. It's just one of those, it would have fit really well because we're starting to see WrestleMania season on the horizon, and The Fiend would have made sense to attack Undertaker because, well, I know he's kind of involved with Randy Orton and, who else? Drew McIntyre kind of on the side, but it's also kind of fitting that he would have attacked Undertaker because of WrestleMania 31 and Bray's whole vengeance tour that he's going on. would have made sense that he attacks the Undertaker and he can be the one to finally retire him. But hey, I mean, I've been fantasy booking that for a year and a half, and it's obviously not going to happen. But let me ask you this, I guess, just quickly. If you were going to book Sting and Taker, like, how would you have done it, right? Like, who would have gone over?
I'll be honest. I never wanted to see a match particularly. I honestly just wanted to see a staring contest and making them kind of both kind of like retire, turn off the lights and pretend like they never, like that's all I wanted to see. Like I it's not one of those situations where I have to see a match between the two, because a match between Undertaker and Sting right now, like, he would use the Scorpion Death Drop and, like, literally kill the Undertaker. And he would probably break his back in the process. Like, it would be the worst match, probably worse than the Undertaker and Goldberg. So that is something I wouldn't say I would like to see, but I would love to just see the fact that they can have a staring contest, look deep into each other's eyes, the fans can reminisce.
Yep.
And then say, thank you so much for your service. Get out of here. I don't want to see you
The stare down would be infinitely more entertaining than the match itself. I mean, how often? I don't think there's any other fantasy program in the history of fantasy booking that you could say that Sting and Undertaker would be better off just staring at each other than laying a hand on one another. It's just insane.
And I will say this. I know we've been on this for a while, but it is kind of frustrating where Sting came back. Right, and everybody was so hyped, right? Like, he came back and they had a chance to do Sting and the Undertaker at WrestleMania, and they're like, you know, let's do it with Triple H
and have him lose.
Yeah.
Like, have him lose in the one match at WrestleMania to Triple H. I mean, that was one of the worst and most overbooked matches. I remember that very well. And by the end of that match, I mean, the makeup was coming off him. He just kind of looked like a bit of a broken down old man. But I don't know. So, boy, getting off topic. But hey, I think it's a stare down. Yes. Stare down, please, and end it there. Yeah. Okay.
That was a nice short segment on the Undertaker.
Though. Yeah, jeez. There's so much with the Undertaker that you could get into. I mean, it's just infinite. So, okay. Into the actual card here, and it started off with the Men's Survivor Series. 5-on-5. We had Team Raw versus Team SmackDown, and it ended up being a clean sweep for Raw, as not only Jey Uso is the sole survivor, as I would have predicted, and he should have been, given how he was booked over the last couple of months against Roman. But we also had Seth Rollins just kind of, you know, take a brogue kick willingly from Sheamus, saying, you know, I don't know if he said do what you need to do or do what you should do or something like that. And he just took a brogue kick. So I guess kind of a multi-layered question. What did you think of the Seth Rollins deal? What does that mean? And what did you think about Raw doing a clean sweep over SmackDown?
Yeah, I'm not sure what he said. I think he said, like, for the greater good or something like that. I'm not 100% sure exactly what was going on there. What do I think about the Seth Rollins situation? I don't know. I think I know I'm supposed to come here and tell you my opinions on that specifically, but I don't know. I don't understand. I don't know what they're trying to do moving forward, because Seth Rollins' star power just kind of been diminishing a little bit, even though he did have a pretty decent storyline there for a while. But this specifically, I guess it works with his character, but I just don't know what they're... I guess I kind of need to see Monday Night Raw tomorrow and see exactly what they're doing with this, because if they don't do anything with it, that it's just stupid, right? Like, he just loses for no reason, right? So, as for the match itself, there's a couple good suplex spots. There's a running power slam spot. Otis was doing the thing with Keith Lee. The funny thing is, when I saw Otis, you know, they're like, oh, Keith Lee and Otis are in the ring together, two really heavy boys. And I'm like, yeah, but, like, Keith Lee, like, he looks like a star, right? And Otis is, you know, he's a funny guy. He's a great guy, but... you know, he's kind of a comedy character as of right this moment. So I don't put them in the middle of the ring. It's not like, can you imagine, like, them trying to do a big promo or a big storyline between the two and trying to hype them up as being big things? Like, it doesn't work for me. I thought it was a generic match. I'm quite interested that Monday Night Raw absolutely destroyed SmackDown 5-0. What did you think of that?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that it's happened. I remember a couple of years ago when I think Shane was running SmackDown and Stephanie was running Raw, and Raw completely swept every match on the card against SmackDown, and there were really zero consequences. I mean, this whole pay-per-view is zero consequence. The whole pay-per-view is essentially a consequenceless bragging rights pay-per-view. I mean, they might as well just have renamed the whole thing to bragging rights, because there are zero consequences to this, because there are no championships on the line, nothing but egos. Like, egos are the only thing on the line here. So, I mean, I thought it was unexpected, I guess. Typically, I mean, you'd have at least a 3-on-1 scenario, or even a 4-on-1 scenario, and they would end up losing 2-1. You know, they get a couple of eliminations, the team that's outnumbered. But I mean, again, like you said, it was kind of a generic match. It felt like very Monday Night Raw, maybe main event Monday Night Raw-ish. And it was fine. Having Keith Lee get the victory was also probably the right move, given where they think that he'll be in the coming months and years with WWE. I had really no problem with it. I didn't feel emotional on either end. Other than really the only thing is, I mean, Seth Rollins is like, what's happening? And I think it might be some kind of story writing him off for a month or two or more to go spend time with his wife, who is expecting soon. So I think there's a lot of it due to that. And we'll hopefully, when he returns after his hiatus with his wife and kid, that he's, repackaged, but revitalized. Seth needs something quickly. He is falling very, very quickly, kind of in a scary downward spiral. Seth, this is probably the lowest Seth has been in quite some time. And I don't know. Are you concerned, or are you just kind of rolling with the punches with Seth right now?
You know, I'm not really concerned, because even though technically it is, I would say, the lowest part of his career, I still feel like he's still very entertaining to a certain extent. And I still enjoy a lot of the matches he puts in, a lot of the promos he puts in. I still think he's doing a pretty good job for what he has being written for him. So that's why I don't think it's too big of a deal. I think he'll come back, after Becky has her lovely kid there, and are they going to put them together? Oh God, that would be awful. But that is something that they might think about doing. I will say this though, the Keith Lee finish was awesome. He could not have used that move, or kind of like caught him any more perfectly. And, you know, kind of turning around into that powerbomb was so nice, man. So I did like that. And my man, Matt, not Dave, Matt, that's an inside joke. You guys don't need to know. I will say this. Keith Lee has a new theme song.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fine. Yeah. I mean, I know that you were a big non-proponent of him when he came up to the, quote, main roster and they changed his music. I mean, it was I'm with you on the first try, but I mean, it's fine. I have, you know, I'm not against it. Did you not like it?
Honestly, I thought it was fine. I thought it was pretty good. I think it's better than the first one he had. The second one, I apologize. The second one he had, the first one was probably, I would say, the best still, but it's definitely an improvement over the other one, because when I heard that, I just heard Jobber theme. So it's nice to see that he's kind of getting repackaged on the fly as well still. And he did have a big moment. So I guess that's some pretty good news. And then we moving on, my man, Bobby Lashley. You know, the U.S. Raw holder versus Sami Zayn. What did you think of all that one?
I'm sad that Sami lost. I mean, although Sami losing makes sense, because no matter how many times he loses, there's always an excuse for it. There's always an angle. There's always a strategy. There's always a conspiracy theory. So while I'm a huge fan of Sami Zayn on the mic and in the ring, him losing in a way actually was good for him, because it feeds his character that always is looking out for conspiracy theories on why he lost. He's always got some reason or some kind of outlandish excuse for why he lost, about people conspiring against him and all these just I love it. I love it. So it's weird that his character benefits more from losing than winning. Do you feel the same way?
No. big fan of you, Matt. I hate this Sami Zayn game. Actually, I think, in my opinion, it's the worst gimmick he's ever had. I just can't stand it. And I know that's kind of the whole gimmick, is kind of me not to stand it and him complaining and conspiracies. But I think he was finally starting to get his rhythm before he kind of left for the whole COVID thing. And he was starting to get entertaining again, and now he comes back with a stupid gimmick, and I can't handle it, man. I don't know what it is about it. I don't think it works for his character as much as people think it does, because he does have that natural charisma when it comes to something like this. You know, kind of the annoying kind of heel type style, but I just don't like it. As for the match itself, Bobby Lashley winning, I think, is the right call. You got to keep the Hurt Business strong. This is not just a generic stable for the WWE. Remember, they were picked in the first, second round in the draft, right? They've been pumping these guys up pretty heavily now, and Bobby Lashley's kind of the main guy on there, so you need to keep a title on him. I think I'm perfectly fine, but I will agree with you that Sami Zayn losing does help his character, even if in my personal opinion, we disagree on this one, that I think his character sucks, to be honest.
I see your frustration, but Sami Zayn, if they didn't have at least faith in him, they wouldn't let him, you know, hold a microphone every single week. I mean, I love the fact that they let him go out there, and he seems very unscripted every single week. Now, I will say that I agree that before he left, before the hiatus, before COVID happened, and he lost to or gained the Intercontinental Championship from Braun Strowman, I think he was on a better tear and a better spot in his career than he is now, because he gained the championship from Braun Strowman. I think they had really good chemistry with Strowman, because he was able to literally not had a finger laid on him by Braun Strowman, and they never followed up with that at all. It just kind of dissolved after he came back. It didn't exist. And I like how he's claiming himself as the true Intercontinental Champion, and he was angry that he even had to be in that ladder match to just confirm that he was the Intercontinental Champion and do the handcuff thing he did and all that, and put the handcuff through Jeff Hardy's ear and all that stuff. I mean, I love when Sami Zayn is just the ultimate, I don't want to say ultimate opportunist, but he is the ultimate, he's the ultimate conspiracy theorist. He's the ultimate strategist, I guess, is what Corey Graves labeled him as. I like Sami Zayn in this iteration, but I would like him to at least kind of continue. I don't want him to be a comedic Intercontinental Champion, is what I'm trying to say. I want him to not just be kind of a fluke where anyone could beat him and you know it. I want him to have a little bit of credibility instead of just kind of that heel that, you know, if he was one-on-one with any babyface, he'd lose.
But see, the thing about Sami Zayn is, in my opinion, he is naturally charismatic. I thought his face run was kind of underrated. I think he could play both roles pretty well. I know he had a great run there with Kevin Owens, Kevin Owens, yeah, Kevin Owens there. And I thought it was getting stale a little while longer, but eventually, like, I thought it was pretty good overall. But there's something about Sami Zayn that makes you like him. But at the same time, I don't like when they kind of go away from that. I guess it's really hard for me to explain it. But, like, even his song is catchy. The way he moves is catchy. The way he interacts with fans, I believe, is catchy. And I think the fact that there is no fans in the crowd, I would say, does hurt him if he was a face. But as a heel, I guess, you know, I guess it works. I don't know. I'm gonna keep watching, Matt. Mm-hmm. Okay? I'm gonna focus mm-hmm. deep down in my soul. Okay, on this hair character, and if I come back to you and I say, hey, you know what, maybe it's not so bad, well, then there you go, buddy.
All right, no, that sounds like a plan, because I am on the side of Sami Zayn getting a lot of camera time, regardless of whether, you know, even if they're not portraying him in the way that, you know, you would like to. He is so good on the mic, like you said. He's a heel that, you know, he's a heel. You still enjoy seeing him get his ass kicked, but at the same time, every time he has a microphone, he's entertaining as hell. And I think WWE knows that, because he has a microphone in his hand every single week. So, okay, moving on here to the Street Profits. God, I love this match. The Street Profits versus the New Day, the SmackDown Tag Team Champions versus the Raw Tag Team Champions. Now, I don't know about you. This, to me, was in the top two matches for the night. This one was awesome. You know, it's a shame that these guys aren't on the same brand where we could have a longstanding feud with them, but it was great for what it was. I really loved this match, even more so than I thought I would. You know, I knew it was going to be good given the talent in the ring there. The only thing I wasn't a fan of, and had nothing to do with the match itself, but Big E, who's supposed to be you know, on this singles run finally, and the New Day's broken up. Oh, they're back together because they're on the pay-per-view, and then they come out looking like, you know, the three lost Power Rangers. And I know it's Gears of War. I know what the game is. I know what they're in. I understand the premise. But him coming out where we're supposed to suddenly start to take him seriously, and he's supposed to have this run, comes out with, you know, the New Day like he hadn't missed a step, and he just – he can't seem to shed the New Day skin. He needs to get rid of this and absolve himself of the New Day gimmick if we're ever going to take him seriously, unless they just – Vince goes, he's too damn entertaining being, you know, New Day. I mean, I'm not a fan of the New Day gimmick anyway, but if you're looking for a serious Big E run, you got to get rid of this crap. I mean, you just do. So
you're not a big gamer there, Matt? No hippity hop. Millennial.
I know what Gears of War is. I'm not. Yeah, no. I know what they were doing. I know, but still.
Yeah. Honestly, when I saw the Big E come out there, I had two thoughts in my head. My first thought was like, okay, it's a promotion thing. And if I see him on the side of the ropes there, you know, watching the match from like near the ring, I thought, oh my God, he's turning heel. He's turning heel. It crossed my mind, but he wasn't there. He left immediately after the promo. And I'm like, okay, he's not turning heel. He's gone. It was just for the Gears of War promotion. I agree with you. He shouldn't be there. I guess they're just trying to sell it, but I guess, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand why he was there. Like, because the whole point is you could have Big E not there and still promote the Gears of War thing just by having the other two guys wear the costumes, but whatever. Anyway, so as for the match, you know, I was going to say match of the night, and it was so hard for me, and we will get to Drew versus Roman Reigns. I don't put it as my match of the night, but it was damn close. Oh my God, do they have chemistry together or what? I thought this is probably Angelo Dawkins' best match ever in the ring. I thought he looked agile. I thought he looked fast. Xavier Woods was trash talking like crazy on the outside. I'm not sure if you cut that, you know, or heard that little promo he kind of cut in the middle of the match to the announcer. Did you catch it?
What no.
Xavier Woods was saying?
No, what'd he say?
Well, he was just talking. He was just talking mad crap. Was saying, "Oh, these guys are basically jobbers. Basically, we're the kings, and you know, like they had no chance to like even come close to them. They're not the same records." It's just, it was so good. Xavier Woods was just brilliant. I thought they worked a really good high pace match as well. Man, Montez Ford again continues to be athletic beyond words. You know, the best way I could describe it in one beautiful word is chemistry. That's it.
Yeah.
It's chemistry.
That is exactly what these two teams have. I really could have watched them, you know, for 40, 50 minutes. Like, I could have watched this match. This is one of those matches that, as a wrestling fan, yeah, the story wasn't so great. And I am huge on story more than athleticism because I believe the story matters more. But there are times when the match is so good that you get involved in the story being told in the ring. And this is one of those times where you're like, okay, this is why I love wrestling, right? Like, this is one of those matches, and I was really just getting lost in time watching this with how good they were and how many great near falls they were. You know, you and I have been watching wrestling for I don't know how many years combined, and you just know when a fall's coming. Like, you can feel it coming, and especially when you have the announcers go, oh, this is it. We're going to have new tag team champions or whatever the case may be. You're like, okay, well, thanks, man. Now I know they're not getting the pinfall here. I mean, like, there are so many times and so many, like, cardinal sins that the announcers have that you immediately know who's winning and who's not. But in this case, obviously no championships on the line. It's pure chemistry. All involved, every single person, especially Montez Ford, who is clearly the star of all four of them. I mean, if you're going to pick one star out of the entire group, Montez Ford is clearly that star. Angelo Dawkins, while, you know, certainly athletic and certainly the big man, he is he's good. He's just not as good as Montez Ford. That's just a fact. I mean, that's always a fact with almost every single tag team. So I loved this match.
Well, it's because we're wrestling marks, man.
Yeah, I know.
That's the real reason. We've been watching so much wrestling. They can basically I basically know when they're going to commercial too, right? Just by the one word. Oh, right?
You can hear the tone in their voice change.
Oh yeah.
Or they zoom into somebody's face and like, and you know, can they get back in this match? Well, of course they can. Like, yeah. Like,
after the break. Well, if no one they went, come after the no. break and then they're in a rest hold, right?
Yeah. There's always somebody in a chokehold or something. I'm thinking to myself, if no one ever gets thrown to the outside of the ring, are they ever going to be able to go to commercial break? Like, if no one, you know,
not,
they would not be able to do it. So,
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I agree with you that Montez Ford is no doubt a superstar in the making. Let me ask you this, man. I don't know about you, but I got a lot of vibes with the New Day and the Usos, man. The chemistry was so good with those two groups. I can literally watch them every single week. It doesn't matter if it was a new storyline, new promo, new match. I could watch those guys wrestle forever. And I got that same vibe with these guys. And it is a shame that, you know, one's on Raw and one's on SmackDown. But even if it's just for tonight, I think now they know, okay, these guys work really well together. We'll put them together sometime in the future. And it was a great match. It was a fantastic match.
Absolutely. And with WWE's lack of enforcing their own rules of a brand split, I would have no doubt that, you know, these two could show up on each other's shows because there's no explanation whenever they do it. So, yeah, I'm not concerned that these two ever won't cross paths again. So, okay, now onto the SmackDown Women's Championship. Another, I thought, really good match with Sasha Banks defeating Raw Women's Champion Asuka. I'll give you the first shot at this one.
You know what? I actually want to hear your opinion first because I'm not as high as you on this match. Like, I'm not saying it was a bad match per se. I thought it was a great match. But I want to hear exactly why you thought this was such a good match.
Well, first of all, we haven't seen these two compete in quite a while together in the ring. It seems as if the Bayley and Sasha Banks thing went on for eternity, at least the build to it, not the actual execution of the match and of the blow off. I think the blow off of Sasha Banks and Bayley was actually like a D+. Like WWE really dropped the ball on that. But with Asuka coming into the mix here, I enjoy, number one, the chemistry, the physicality of that Asuka and Sasha Banks really implemented here was almost scary at times. Like they had, and Sasha Banks just doesn't care about her body. Like she will throw her body on solid concrete and she does just really throws caution to the wind. And Asuka is super stiff with her kicks most of the time. They're just really snug. And I love that. Like whenever it doesn't feel like it's kind of just a performance, like, you know, Cirque du Soleil or something, like I love that. And it was physical. That's what I really like. Even more physical than Bayley and Sasha Banks. And the chemistry they have is really good. Obviously, credit to Asuka. The near falls were believable. The only thing I didn't like out of this, if I was going to put a negative on it, which made it from being a, you know, really, really good match, was that it was a roll-up. I mean, that is just the ultimate finisher, apparently, in WWE. They have to have one, like one or two. It's like a quota that they have. I don't know what it is. I'm not a fan of the roll-up. I understand it's a finish, but when you're kicking people in the head, kneeing people in the head, and jumping from the top rope and slamming your, you know, elbow into someone's throat, and that doesn't finish them, but by God, they can't kick out of a roll-up, it's kind of like, really? You know, like, come on. That's the only thing I would say. Other than that, I like the chemistry, the near falls, and the physicality. That's really what did it for me, was just how physical these women were with one another.
But Matt, it wasn't just one roll-up. It was like
18.
Eight roll-ups in a row.
It was a lot. But they were really smooth from roll-up to roll-up. Like it wasn't sloppy, is what I'm saying. So,
you know, if this is a video game, they're just, you know, they're getting a little higher into the level up count until they finally reach maximum roll-up power for the victory, right?
Yeah.
And hey, I know where Sasha Banks' physicality comes. She's on the Mandalorian now, man. Like, that's, of course, they got all that from their All right. I thought the match was pretty good. Like, I agree with you that it was a very physical affair. I thought some of the backstabbers, there's a bunch of backstabbers, right? Like, I think there was like three or four of them. Both of them kind of did it. I thought it was really cool to see. I don't know, for some reason, when I saw the first one off the top rows, I'm like, Codebreaker!
Yo, Codebreaker. Yeah, that's not the same thing. Right? The one where she hung from the rope.
It, yeah. Right? I'm like, oh, they're calling it like a double knee to the back. Yes. I'm like, say Codebreaker, okay? Jericho's a legend, it's okay. We'll kill you guys, you know. I thought it was a solid match. I wouldn't say it was like an amazing match, but I wouldn't say it's a bad match. Definitely it'd be a pay-per-view quality match. I guess maybe I'm tilted over the whole Bayley situation. Like, they built that thing up for so long, and then they have a match. It's like, well, it was fun.
And
that's it.
Well, you're going to get me all riled up on this because I get so heated when I think about this.
Oh, I want to hear it. Come on. Because
they
freaking promo right now.
They built this thing up really well for like 6+ months, and I think they went longer than even they thought they would with these two. And they went to the very top of the mountain. Other than the NXT Women's Championship, they captured all women's championships, the SmackDown, the Raw, and the Women's Tag Team Championships that mean about as much as the 24/7 title, but it's still a women's championship. So they built it up. You knew that one of them's turning on the other, and then you have Bayley turn on Sasha. Okay, so we're all supposed to just apparently cheer for Sasha by default. Yet at the same time, if you're supposed to cheer for Sasha by default, well, isn't she kind of technically the heel for being outsmarted by Bayley? If you know, the babyface is not supposed to get outsmarted by the heel. So if you have the babyface get outsmarted by the heel, and then the babyface doesn't change her character or say, hey, I've seen the light, we're just supposed to, you know, side with you because you weren't smart enough to see this coming. And then, you know, Sasha over the last several weeks has been super arrogant. And, oh, by the way, they built this whole thing. Two out of the three matches that these women had were on free TV on SmackDown. They had one match on a pay-per-view. One. And that match, that the very first one that they had on SmackDown, was for the Women's Championship. No contest by Bayley. She just kind of went with it. Yeah, it was a screwy finish. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Why would you
do this? It makes no sense.
No.
It makes no sense why they would have the super hype match literally on the SmackDown right before the pay-per-view. Like, if you're writing that, I'm just trying to think of the logic, okay? You know, you're building this thing up forever. And, you know, 6 months was the build-up, sure. But, like, these girls have been connected for, like, 6 years, right?
I know.
So, like,
yep.
It's been so long. And you just have it happen on a SmackDown. Yeah, again, it was a screwy finish. But, like, it's one of those situations where you want to just see them together in the ring for the first time in a long time and just, like, and kind of embrace that moment. And that kind of got lost. Luckily, it was a great match on the pay-per-view had. But we knew that was going to happen because both these girls are very talented wrestlers.
That whole thing with Sasha and Bayley. I feel it. That's one of those things that get me really pissed off that WWE does, where they build something up so damn good sometimes, and then it's like, huh? Like, you blow it off on a SmackDown, and like you're just going to give it to us? You know, I mean, I kind of feel that way too about Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre. We'll get there in just a minute, but damn. Anyway, SmackDown Women's Championship, Sasha Banks beats Asuka. I don't think this hurts Asuka in any way. Asuka can bounce back. It was anytime they do the roll-up finish, it's WWE creative acknowledging, hey, we kind of know that they're on the same level, and this is Asuka's out. It's like it's a lazy, cowardly way of booking a match that they don't want to have somebody be definitively better over somebody else by giving them a clean finish. So we're going to do the roll-up, because a roll-up, you could say, is, well, they just got lucky, right? Like, that's the kind of lazy, cowardly booking that I really that WWE does. I'm sorry.
What would you prefer, a roll-up or a 10-second count-out victory?
I guess a 10-second count-out victory, because count-outs don't happen that often. I know it happened in the women's 5-on-5. I get it, but count-outs don't happen as often. So I would take a count-out.
Excellent. I agree with you, actually.
Anyway, okay. Let's get to the women's Survivor Series elimination match. And we had, and I'm not tooting my own horn, but maybe you predicted the same thing. But Lana would be the sole survivor, as she is just shunned by Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. And then they're angry at her at the end of the match, yet they won the match because she did what they told her to do. So I didn't understand that. I mean, I'm surprised Lana didn't go through a table. I thought that she would end up getting her 10th table, but maybe that's only reserved for TV and not pay-per-view. I don't know. But yeah, Lana is the sole survivor. Sure. I mean, I don't really feel strongly about it. This was all about Lana's storyline with Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. But Bianca Belair certainly had a good showing. That was also something I was looking out for. I was very concerned. And really, Liv Morgan. I mean, out of all people, Liv Morgan, I think, had a good showing, too. Ruby Riott ended up passing out from the finish. I can't think of the finish for Shayna Baszler. Yes. So she ends up having a kind of a lackluster match, but I don't know. I didn't hate this match. I thought it was fine, and I kind of saw the ending coming, but that's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading into things too much. Did you enjoy this match?
But honestly, I don't know how it could have happened, but I was expecting some way, somehow, Lana to put Nia Jax through a table. I'm like, where is the spot? It's going to happen. I don't know how it would happen. I don't know if it would have to be pushed off the top ropes, kind of, off the ring kind of there. I don't know, throw a table. Like, I don't know what and how it would have happened, but I was expecting Lana to eventually snap and get her into a table, because I thought it would be kind of nice symbolism there, but that did not happen. I thought Bianca Belair looked great. I guess they're banning her from using her hair. I thought this is a perfect time for her to use her like hair whip kind of move with her long hair, but it looks like it doesn't happen, right? Like, did I miss that spot, or that hasn't happened yet in the WWE,
no.
Right?
No, not that I know, right? Yeah.
And I know it's kind of dangerous, you know, sure, it's like crazy, but like it is a kind of cool part of her character that she could use. I think it would work very well in this type of match, but that didn't happen, but she still looked great. I agree with you on Liv. I thought Liv looked fine. Again, Ruby Riott was selling the pass out so well, I actually thought she was injured. But I'm like, where's the X sign? Like, right, she right. waited before yeah. they kind of pinned her the second time, I guess. So that was quite interesting. Or I guess tapped her out the second time. But that was quite interesting. I don't know, man. I thought it was okay. Like, it's like my staple word recently. I thought it was okay. Like, I don't think it was anything exciting. I the whole Lana situation being the last person, we kind of all predicted it. I thought it would happen a different way. But at the same time, like, you know, Lana winning is kind of nice for her because, you know, she was talking about going through some stuff and a lot of people are making fun of her and all that stuff. So it's kind of nice that she kind of had a nice little moment there for her, no doubt. And, you know, people do have to remember, like, she is getting paid every single week to go through that table. Like, she is getting paid. She's on TV. So that's really good for her and her family. So that's definitely something nice there. So, 10th table spot, probably on the next TV show. But I thought it was okay. Like, C+, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you're just kind of like you're... it's not something you'll remember from the show. Like, it's just one of those.
Spanish Fly happened.
That was oh my god, man! I would be so nervous taking that bump. I mean, there's so little margin for error on that, and it's a beautiful looking move. But man,
Actually, if you looked really close, Lacey Evans landed right on her face. I thought she broke her nose, man.
Ooh, really? I didn't see that. Damn. Yeah, man. Damn.
That was all right.
Yeah, so, again, I guess I'll kind of wrap up this match by saying, like, you know, Lana is supposed to be this sympathetic character, yet, I mean, I have a hard time getting behind any character, male or female, when they can't grow a set, right? Like, when you are trying to win the approval of these girls that are, like, the mean girls in school that just keep humiliating you, and you think you're in the cool, you know, the cool circle, and then they end up, like, you know, giving you a wedgie in front of the school. Like, they keep, you know, and she just keeps falling for it and falling for it and falling for it. And it's hard for me from a psychological standpoint to get behind somebody like that they can't grow a pair and really can't smarten up. Like, that is, and I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to gain sympathy, and she's been humbled and all that. I get it, but I don't know. I'm having a hard time with Lana being on my cheering list, my babyface list personally. So,
but see, Matt, that's why I thought they were going to somehow get her to push or at least kind of screw over Nia Jax, get her onto that table, because then she would have kind of that moment at very least, like, one time Nia goes in there.
She needs to have that moment of snapping, like, where her facials change from pouty little schoolgirl to, like, enraged, like, fierce woman. That's what she needs to do. And pop off. Yes.
And actually dominate. Like, I want to – that's a great point, actually, Matt. Great point. I want to see that, and I want to actually see her just dominate. I know it sounds ridiculous. It's Lana, right? But, like, wouldn't it be cool to see her just snap and just go on a different level? And even if it's just one time, it'll never happen again, but just to have her go and beat the living bleep out of freaking Nia Jax, oh, that would be fantastic.
That's what needs to happen. That's exactly what needs to happen. She has, you know, maybe she bites her lip by accident. She has blood in her teeth or something like that. And, like, I don't know. Like, I could see her just out of nowhere. Like, she gets put through a table again or slapped down or spoken down to again by Nia Jax on Raw. And then you see the camera zoom in on her, and it slowly turns from that kind of quiet schoolgirl. You see the fire in her eyes. Like, it could be a really awesome transition. Like you said, even if it's just that one time, maybe that could, like, kind of be her thing where, you know, she's kind of this sweet woman until you push her and then she snaps. Like, she could be the Ken Shamrock of 2020 in the women's division. I don't know, but So that's what I want to see from her. Otherwise, it's kind of like kind of pathetic. Like, am I supposed to be sympathetic out of pity? I don't know. So,
well, Bailey had that moment, right? Yes. Bailey, remember when Bailey snapped that one time, mm-hmm. and then she went the next week and she was the old Bailey, and everybody thought she turned heel, but she, like, or at least she turned a new character, and then she came back with the same character the next day. But like, she had that snapping moment. And I love that snapping moment. But yeah, I agree 100%, buddy.
Yep, definitely. So, okay. Well, before we get to the main event, we only have a couple of matches left here. And one of them is The Miz winning the dual brand battle royal. Great. Just as Dominic thought that he was victorious, it's the old Royal Rumble finish of there's still somebody left. They weren't eliminated. And that was The Miz, who went through the bottom rope and eliminated Dominic for a dual brand battle royal, I guess, warming us up for the Royal Rumble. I don't know what this was about other than to give everyone a payday and everyone a reason to fly to Orlando and be at this and on this pay-per-view in the in, I think this was the pre-show. So The Miz won. Do you have anything to say? Do you have any feelings on this at all?
A very creative ending, something I haven't seen too many times as a battle royal, but I don't know, man. Like, it's not really too much to talk about it in general. I didn't think it was that bad, to be honest. I thought, like, it held my attention.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I don't understand, like, what was the purpose other than just giving a payday to everybody, which is great for them, you know?
Sure.
They got a payday. Absolutely. But it's just, I guess hyping up a battle royal on a pre-show does make you want to watch the pre-show a little bit more. Just to see kind of who wins the battle royal. I guess that's probably their biggest reason they did it. But other than that, I just didn't have any feelings at all, good or bad, from that.
No, it's one of those.
And it is winning. I made no sense to me either.
And Mr. Money in the Bank wins the battle royal. I mean, I wouldn't put this on his resume, you know, if he's looking for work. I mean, this would not be the thing I put on there. But whatever. I mean, like, literally, as you always say, like, if you're saying okay, I'm saying whatever. Like, sure. I mean, like, that.
This should be whatever. Okay, should be our gimmick. New gimmick names.
Boy, talk about, you know, energy for our audience. Whatever. Okay. I mean, so all right. So now we get to the main event. Universal Champion Roman Reigns faces off against WWE Champion Drew McIntyre. And I have a feeling you have some thoughts on this, some passionate thoughts on this. So I'm going to give the floor to you first on this.
Wow. When I saw those two step into the middle of the ring and lift those championships up, the entire thought of my entire head was going on, am I watching WrestleMania right now? Is this WrestleMania? Like, I need to snap out of it. This is not WrestleMania, because when I saw those two in the middle of the ring together, I had such an exciting feeling of just watching these guys compete. And then slowly, we're going to probably talk about this in parts, but like, I loved how they started so slow with the trash talking. And then, you know, they're not just doing high energy spots at the very beginning. That's fine when you're doing Goldberg versus Lesnar as a surprise thing. But as a kind of a match here where you're building up these two beasts of people, these two iconic wrestling guys right now, right as of right this second, maybe not for the casuals with Drew McIntyre, but these two beasts in the ring, it was so exciting. Even though the pace at the beginning was slow, I love when they slowly push the pace and gets bigger and bigger. So let me ask you, Matt, just the first, say, 35% of the match and the entrances, what did you think?
I was thinking, this is how you make it feel big time. Like, you don't need to start at 60 miles an hour, which is what almost every match starts at all the time, which is punches, kicks, big moves, power moves. No. And I'm not saying every match has to start with chain wrestling like this one did, but when you want to make it feel big time, this is what you do. This is what's called telling a story in the ring, right? Like, they are starting out with, like you said, trash talking, the posturing with the championships, the chain wrestling, the collar and elbow tie-ups. I love that stuff. You don't see that a lot. Everyone just goes to punches and kicks and clotheslines and all that. Like, we don't need to do that all the time, because that's what you build to. Because guess what happens? When you start off slow, those moves that happen typically at the beginning of all the other matches, make it feel more important that, whoa, we've transitioned, right? Like, it's like going to the second gear in your car. You're like, okay, we're now in this gear. Like, you can feel the match and momentum building and building to the finish. So to answer your question, I know we got a lot more to dissect in this, but yeah, I loved this. It makes it feel big time when they do it like that.
Yeah, the big match feeling, man. Like, John Cena, for all the criticism he's always got in the past, he understood how to make big matches feel like big matches. It's one of the things that helped out Kevin Owens when he was starting off. They had a nice slow start with them because it was a big, big time feeling. Excuse me, I just got a cough real quick. So just you can continue. Just,
okay, no, that's all right. 1 second. I get it. I just did the same thing. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I thought the same thing. I'm thinking, man, and WWE did a good job of doing what they could with pumping in crowd noise to make it feel like fans are actually there. That, to me, I know that it's not real, but it, in your mind, it still makes the presentation feel infinitely better than the empty arena or just LED boards, but everything's still silent. That'd be really awkward. So, yeah,
absolutely.
Continue.
And oh, thank you so much. The Future Shock DDT in the middle, the late kick out there from Roman Reigns was brilliant. I loved the Drew McIntyre ducking the Superman punch and going into like a big spine buster for a two count. That was awesome. The, you know, eating Roman Reigns selling that headbutt from McIntyre was just vicious.
Yeah.
It was just two big guys who are just on top of their game. And I have to say, Drew McIntyre, I knew he was good. I knew he was good. I knew he had the wrestling ability. I knew his microphone skills just went on a whole new level. The way he's acting now, he is literally acting not just like a top guy in the company right now. He's acting like he could be the top guy in the company for the next 5, 10, 20 years. Like, he looks unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
With his presence and his mannerism, something that Roman Reigns is very good at, even though he got criticized a lot in the past, as he well deserved, because he was getting kind of boring, but he's always been good as a wrestler and kind of like the mannerisms he's shown. But anyways, let me continue on here. So the match was going on. They had a bunch of spear spots. There was one hitting the barricade. There was one in the middle of the ring. They're really telling an unbelievable story. And then it just happened. I had a feeling where I'm like, there's no way Drew McIntyre is going to win this. And then three quarters way into the match, I thought, oh my God, Drew McIntyre, could he actually beat Roman Reigns here? Like, could this actually happen? And I just love that aspect. What did you think about that so far?
So to, I guess, parallel where you're at so far in the match, I agree about, I mean, the spears were great. And actually, they got me pretty good on the second spear that Roman hit in the middle of the ring where Drew kicked out of the spear. I actually thought that could be it because I think the general consensus was that Roman Reigns was going over in this match. I think that was generally believed. And I think it's the right move too, considering where they're both at in their careers and that Roman's simply hotter right now than Drew is. But to your point, Drew McIntyre is not, like you said, he's not just really good. He is right now and could be the guy. He could, if Roman Reigns, God forbid, got injured and I don't know, like he just had to go away again, Drew McIntyre could carry the company on his back. I really think that he's matured enough to be at that point in his career. And I think that WWE probably looks at Drew McIntyre and goes, this is what Roman should have been when we were pushing him the last 6 years. Like, Drew McIntyre is what WWE wishes Roman was for his 6-year babyface run. That was really, I would say, largely unsuccessful given what they thought and wanted him to be positioned at, simply because they just so many, I mean, I don't want to get into that. It's endless the amount of mistakes they made with him and his babyface, but yeah, without getting to the finish of the match yet, I really agree that he is the guy right now. Like, he carries Raw. He is the face of Raw. Roman, yeah, is probably a bigger star, but boy, is Drew McIntyre hot on his heels right now.
Oh, man, and I got to give Roman Reigns. I know it means a lot coming from me, Roman, but I got to give this joke, by the way, terrible joke, but Roman Reigns gets us so much credit because After that second spear, did you hear what he was saying to Drew McIntyre? Did you catch it?
No.
He was screaming at him, "You're not the same Drew as before. You're not the same Drew. You're not the same McIntyre. I don't know who you are. You're not the same." Basically, in those little words, putting Drew McIntyre so over, it's ridiculous, because he's basically saying, this isn't a Drew in the past anymore. This is a whole new person that I'm gaining respect because of this match. And you can see the respect that Roman Reigns was giving him as the match was going on and on and on. And I love the selling of it. It's exactly what you said. It's storytelling in the middle of a match. You want to know who is amazing at storytelling in the middle of a match? Someone called CM Punk. I wonder if you heard of him. CM Punk was just so similar, where he could turn matches that no one really, not that no one cared about it, but like just turn it into another level. Now, moving on, Jey Uso comes out, kind of helps out Roman Reigns there. We had a super kick there. But, like, it wasn't that big of a help. Like, it was, but I didn't think, like, it made that big of an impact. Obviously, it did dictate the match at the end, but I didn't think, like, he, like, went that nuts against Drew McIntyre, so... I didn't really like that Jey moment. I thought it was kind of silly. I thought Jey would have to do a lot more, but he kind of just one little kick, and I guess he got knocked out on the outside, and that was it. And then obviously Roman Reigns got him in the guillotine move, and that was the end of it. But Drew McIntyre was fighting out of that guillotine choke, and I was thinking, oh my God, it's going to happen. Drew's going to somehow do this. And then, of course, he passes out. So I love the match. I would rate it, if I had to rate it, I would rate it an A. I like a 9.5 out of 10. My match of the night, no doubt about it. One of the top 10 matches of the year. I thought it was just an unbelievable, high-quality match between two unbelievable wrestlers.
This made me really look forward to their next one. And let's be totally honest here. There will be a next time, because now, yes, they're on different brands. I understand that. But maybe Drew wins the Rumble and these two meet again at WrestleMania, and this time it's for a championship.
And Drew wins.
Yeah. I mean, so it's possible that these two do meet again in the coming months, and their foundation's been laid because the babyface got screwed. Right. So it's not that you don't have a story here. Now you've laid the foundation. And to your point, Jey Uso was minimally involved. But when you look at the butterfly effect, if Jey Uso didn't hit him with a super kick, that is, I mean, it's as common as a clothesline now. You wouldn't have had Roman Reigns hit the low blow. Don't forget about the low blow that he hit. I mean, when he hit the low blow, I'm like, oh, that SOB. Like,
that's right.
It made me so angry. And I'm like, I feel like a kid again. I'm like, I'm 35 years old, right? I'm like, you know, and this is what makes me love wrestling, when I get so angry. Anger is an emotion that I think WWE really underestimates at times, because anger, it's not angry at the product. It's angry at the wrestler, because you want to see them get their ass kicked, and you'll pay to see them get their ass kicked. And that's a good thing if you're in the business of making money, because then they're going to subscribe to the network. They're invested in the story. They're watching the TV to watch them. They want that payoff. They want that satisfaction. So I really was a big fan of the low blow. I mean, that I didn't see coming. It's perfect for his character. And yeah, he got the win. And like you said, he's fighting out of that the guillotine, and he almost did. And I'm like, oh my God. Maybe he does kick, you know, roll them off and boom, Claymore, and, yeah, you know, good night the lights. But that's not what happened. And it's, I think, the right move. And you also, the secondary story is Jey Uso, who was trying to gain acceptance back from Roman Reigns after losing 5-on-1, and Roman Reigns not even able to look at him after that match, not understanding. When Jey Uso went up to Roman Reigns' locker room, and Roman is like, I didn't ask you for excuses. And he's like, Roman, it's like 5-on-1. And Roman is just dismissing him like that's not an excuse. I'm like, dude, it's 5-on-1. And all of that is – the whole thing is just disrespect. It's disrespecting you, which disrespects me, which disrespects my family. The whole thing is just, I love it. I'm loving this. Jey Uso is a bigger star than he's ever been in the last 6 years combined. So, yeah, this match was just off the charts. Huge, huge props to everyone involved, the booking of it, the execution of it. And I'm really looking forward to their next encounter. And it, you can guarantee yourself that it's going to be probably in the next 3 to 5 months.
Yeah, bring on the Samoan Dynasty. I've been talking about this on my channel for so long. I've been talking about it to you for so long. I've been saying this. Bring Roman Reigns with Jimmy and Jey Uso and make some storyline to get Samoa Joe into that family. I don't know how you'll do it, but make it happen and start the Samoan Dynasty, because that is something that I've been kind of harping on, because it's so obvious it would work. It's just such a perfect stable. And there's just so much excitement that you could have from that type of a stable. I agree with you 100% with the whole Jey being involved is good. I just thought he would do a little bit more. But I love that the hug at the end, because it did set up, right? Because at the very beginning, Jey lost. Technically, the team lost and he was choked. And he went out and helped Roman Reigns win. And Roman Reigns won. Now, I didn't see any, like, smirk there for Roman. I think it was legitimate, thanks. Right? I think it was a legitimate thanks, and I quite enjoyed it. I just love this Roman Reigns character, man, and I don't know how it's going to happen, but Rocky, man. Rocky, come back home and start this bad boy, because I want to see The Rock versus Roman Reigns here at least once. But I agree, man. Yeah. Drew McIntyre, wow.
What also is interesting, and I was talking about this on a podcast I did earlier this week, is how often is Paul Heyman with someone that he's almost a non-factor with, right? Like, Paul Heyman is important to Roman Reigns, but I don't think he's as important as people probably thought he would be or need to be with the promo skills or lack of that Roman had at least shown over the last 6 years or so. You would think that, oh, they're putting, Paul Heyman with him because, he's not great on promo, so Paul Heyman's going to be his mouthpiece, and that'll cure that part of his, his weaknesses, if you will. And really, Paul Heyman hasn't done a whole lot other than kind of just stand there and make faces, and he says the occasional words, but and I don't want to say Paul Heyman's irrelevant, but it's almost as if Roman Reigns were alone, it still wouldn't be that bad. I still think he'd be very successful. It's amazing that Paul Heyman is almost a non-factor.
It's insane. It's absolutely bonkers. And I, like you said, like, when was the last time that ever happened? A lot of people said, well, you need to be this Paul Heyman guy to get that top-end echelon manager to push you over. But the best Paul Heymans are the ones when he's not too much involved, right? Like, CM Punk can talk. Right. And he was with Paul Heyman, and I know they did a lot of great stuff together. But, CM Punk can carry himself really well without Paul Heyman. Right. Brock Lesnar's, it was just a match made in heaven. That's the definitely not the case there. It's just more like he's the talker of the group. But Roman Reigns, man, he could be alone and he would be a star. No doubt about it. But I will say this, man, seeing something with them together, just what them being together, I think it just adds a little more credibility to his character. And I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
I just feel like he's bigger because Paul Heyman is on his side.
I agree. And that's a good point to make, because while Paul Heyman's almost a non-factor from a talking perspective, which is almost unthinkable, it's Paul Heyman's presence that I think does solidify and legitimize where Roman Reigns is at and the character that they're trying to build. So yeah, well, even if Paul Heyman's not talking, which again, it's just crazy to think that they don't really need him to talk, it does still add something to Roman Reigns. And I agree with that. And to your last point about the whole Rock coming back, I keep hearing rumors about that, and apparently The Rock's been contacted. I mean, I've heard it all, right? And here's my thought on it. Here's my final thought as of, again, November 22nd.
Right? Like, honest. You're going to be talking about this for the next
I'm dating myself. Like, I'm dating myself. This is my final thought for today, like November 22nd, whatever the hell today
is. Undertaker's final retirement.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, in air quotes. I think that what's going to happen is if there are fans back, true fans, like living human beings in the arena, wherever they're being held. And I know they're going to the Tropicana Field in Tampa. So that's obviously a much larger arena, which means you could have more people that are able to be spaced out, and you have an open air arena. So there are positives for doing that, where you could bring live fans back in a safer way than if you were in a concealed, smaller arena. So if they're able to bring fans back, say if the stadium holds 100,000 people and you fit 15,000 in there, then you've only got capacity of 15%. Maybe they're within the health guidelines of Florida. I don't know the specifics, but you could do it. So my point is, if you were able to bring fans back, I think then The Rock would probably be more enticed to come back, because his character is so built around fan interaction. Like, I know everyone's is, but The Rock's is especially built around fan interaction, fan reaction. And for The Rock to come back to really an empty arena or just LED boards with pumped in crowd noise, I don't think would really, number one, it'd be kind of awkward for him, and probably not as enticing and tempting for him to come back. So I think really the presence of fans will dictate that.
I agree. The presence of fans would make The Rock, coming back much bigger. No doubt about it, but The Rock has just so much natural charisma. Even if there's no fans technically there, I feel like he would make it like we're there. Like, you know what I mean? He would cut such a good storyline that even though there's technically no fans in that building, he would still find a way to make me forget that there's no fans in that building, because he just has that natural ability. And this storyline is just screaming for babyface Rock.
Yeah. It's dying. It's on its knees. Like, the storyline is on its knees banging The Rock. Yeah, it is.
This is the new Sting Undertaker.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
It's up to, yeah.
For a while.
I would love to see it. It would fit in so perfectly, and maybe that's what they're setting up for. Maybe that's why they didn't get to Drew and Roman and wait to WrestleMania for these two to match up, because maybe The Rock had given them the I'll do it this year. I mean, maybe, you know, because I thought Roman and Drew were going to be WrestleMania main event. I mean, and they could be, they still could be, you know, like they could still build to that, absolutely, but maybe that's one of the reasons why they just got this out of the way, so to speak, to get to The Rock at WrestleMania. I mean, there's so many different conspiracy theories, but
who knows, yeah, man.
All right. Well, it's been obviously a blast talking to you, as always, about Survivor Series. I mean, it's kind of weird. Like, I look at Survivor Series as kind of the precursor to WrestleMania season, because TLC, I mean, it's a pay-per-view, but it's kind of one of those, like, B pay-per-views, the gimmick pay-per-views. And after you get to the first of the year, boom. I mean, you're in Rumble season, which is WrestleMania season. So we're, like, only 5-6 weeks away from WrestleMania season. It's insane. I mean, again, it's always a blast. And before you head out, though, I gotta let you or let our listeners know exactly, like, what do you do, where they can find you.
Well, thank you for honoring me by coming on here. It really is. It's I have an unbelievable time doing this. It looks like every pay per view now. It's just such a blast for me talking wrestling with another passionate wrestling guy and another passionate wrestling fan. And I truly think that we have just an unbelievable chemistry together. And I'm sure we'll be doing this again in the future. The way to find me is you can just type in the Botch Guy on YouTube. I should pop up right there. I'm not trying to brag or anything, but it's I should pop up right there. And I do reactions, promos, and botches, and documentaries, and radio spy. I do a little bit of everything. But at the end of the day, you will have a good time. How the WWE like to say, gonna have a good time if you come out there. And also, a lot of my community is now supporting your podcast, and I've been hyping you up so high that you might have a resurgence like the Randy Orton, my friend. Like, this, you are the next Randy Orton, like a multiple time heavyweight champion of podcasting. That's what you are. You know that, right?
I did not know that. I mean, like, that's a pretty high honor. And I would say, I mean, if you're talking about chemistry, if you're, you know, talking about that you and I have good chemistry, and I think we do, we probably are the equivalent of tonight's Drew McIntyre-Roman Reigns match. I mean, like, or the SmackDown Tag Team Champions versus the Raw Tag Team Champions. I mean, that's kind of the chemistry I think we have, if we're going to be using wrestling analogies. So, yeah.
And it's also just, once again, I want everybody to just have a great time and stay safe and truly, truly thank you for having me, man. It really is an unbelievable time we have together, and I'll continue to come here as long as you want to have me, man.
Absolutely. Well, I think you're welcome every single pay-per-view and anytime in between. Like you said, if crazy things happen, maybe we'll pop you back on and you can voice your opinion as you do so eloquently. So,
Excellent.
All right. Well, take care, and I will be talking to you very soon.
All right. Take care, buddy.
All right, Cheers. Buddy. Bye.